to show you Plato's metaphysics. Now you should have a copy of this somewhere in those. Okay. Do you have it? No, I did not give it to you. Oh, the cave, right there. No, lower. Right here.
Oh, all right.
You're probably wondering what that cave is all about, huh?
Where does that cave go to?
Okay, I'm going to show you. Just hold on for just a second. Okay, yeah, Plato. This is Plato. Plato's metaphysics. Now, I'll tell you what, this is really unbelievable. I don't know how we're going to cram this into 45 minutes, folks. We're going to try, and we'll just give you a little taste of what he believes, just enough to get Harvey going so he gets finally interested in philosophy and he goes out and gets these guys' books. Okay, we're doing this just for you. Okay, Parmenides, ladies and gentlemen, says that all things are in a constant... Oh, listen, by the way, these are the kind of questions that you're going to need to know for the exam. Like this, here's the question. Who said all things are Hyder? Nobody? Thales. Yes. I'm going to go over the exam in the third part, and you'll see it won't be that bad, okay? But you're going to need to kind of know, like, who said everything's in a constant state of flux? Know just, like, the key lines to these guys. That's all I'm going to ask you to know. You know what I mean? Thales says that all things are Hyder. Anaximander says that all things are Eperon. Eperon, the boundless, the infinite. Remember, not the infinite, the boundless. Anaximenes.
This is not a tape.
God bless you too. You couldn't have picked the worst week to be absent. But anyway, yes, it is. If you've got 3 or 4 years to read through it before the next. There is no Thales handout. All you really need to know about him is just some very basic stuff. That's even on some of the other handouts. Anaximander says that all things are Eperon, and Anaximenes says that all things are air. Okay? Heraclitus, we didn't even get any of this. You don't want to know what he says? All things are fire. He says all things are fire, constant changing. The main thing about him, though, is that one cannot step into the same river twice, because when you step into the river the second time, different waters encompass you. So all things are in a constant state of flux. Parmenides says all things are constantly the same. The sophists say, well, relativism, whatever floats your boat, go for it, that kind of thing, okay? Who are we forgetting? Oh, the Pythagoreans. All things are?
Numbers.
Numbers are things and things are numbers. And never touch a white rooster, remember that? Never eat beans, right? Okay, we'll go over the test. There's 40 questions on it. They're all true and false and multiple guess, all right? Well, what do you know about all of these guys? What do they say? Thales says all things are what?
Liquidity,
right? Hyder. How many things is Hyder?
Three.
No.
One.
No, Hyder is how many things?
One.
One thing, right? All things are a Peron. Anaximander, how many things are that? One, right?
Gene, when you say Hyder, how do you spell that? What is that?
Hyder. It's like hydro.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. Like hydro. I really feel bad for you two ladies who missed last night. This must be like the world went by. But how many things are Eperon? One. How many things are, how many things are air? One quality, right? Single quality, monism, one, mono, one. How many things are numbers? Well, numbers are many things, but number itself is one, basically one thing, right? But that's a little bit different. All things are characterized by what? A constant state of flux, Heraclitus. How many characteristics? One basic characteristic of all things. Parmenides, all things are unchanging or immutable. One basic characteristic. Plato comes up with something radical. He comes up with a dualistic metaphysics, and that's why it says it at the top of your sheet. Plato's dualistic metaphysics. See? Okay, now. He believed, folks, that there were two kinds of reality. Okay? One kind of reality, and in the handout, I break down all the Greek words that he uses, and you can read through it, and you can sympathize with the seniors and see what they put up with. And you know the unbelievable thing is one of the exams that I have for the seniors, one of the quizzes that I have for the seniors, is that I give them these two circles blank, and they have to fill them in. And I'll tell you what, I have only one senior that's really not doing any work. I mean, they're just doing, they're doing magnificent with it. But anyway, okay. So here's the thing. He says there's two kinds of reality. One are forms, essences, prototypes, and ideas. Any of those things. This is the top circle. The top circle are forms, ideas, essences, and prototypes. Now follow me for a moment, okay? The second kind of reality is what he calls the receptacle. It is a place, this is down here, okay? It is almost, and he writes about this in his dialogue, the Timaeus, T-I-M-E-A-U-S, the Timaeus. And he talks about what this is, and he can't even describe it himself. So if I do a poor job of it, folks, don't be too hard on me. He can't explain it himself. The receptacle is a, stop that, is a place of flickering images that flicker in an instant. For lack of a better term, matter comes together quickly into geometric shapes and immediately decomposes. Comes together and immediately breaks apart. Flickering images, completely unstable. It's a soup of chaos. Okay? So, we have a world of chaos and we have a world of perfection. Forms, essences, ideas, and prototypes is another world. Okay? We live in the overlap. You're not impressed by that. Holy cow, that's usually my, ooh. After that, it's all downhill, folks. we live in the overlap. We live in a world which is characterized by perfection mixed with chaos. Okay? Now watch this. Here's what Plato can't understand. What's that? Jackie?
The noise of the chair.
That thing there, that blue thing. It's a chair? What's this?
Chair on wheels.
That's a chair as well. Anybody disagree that this is a chair? Anybody disagree this is a chair? You know that lazy boy? I know you got a lazy, you look like someone who's got a lazy boy in your house. Do you have one? Is it one, the recliner deals?
Yeah. Actually, both, each end of my couch.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Gene. Thank you very much. Let me see. You had eggs for breakfast. Okay, I can tell by your tie. Okay, no, all right, listen. Here we go. This is a chair and this is a chair. You following me, Harvey? Here's what Plato says. They don't look alike. How can you tell that that's a chair and that's a chair? And the lazy boy that's in Billy's house is also a chair. When they're made out of different materials, different textures, different colors, different, they taste differently if you care to taste them. They smell differently. They're made out of, they're completely different. What makes them a chair? Well, what's going to be your first answer?
The form they take and what you do with them.
Aha! Okay. But I can sit on a desk. Is a desk a chair?
No.
I can sit on a couch. Is a couch a chair? And I can take you to the Museum of Fine Arts, and I can take you to the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and I can show you some chairs that definitely do not look like traditional chairs, or they wouldn't be in museums, right, folks? And these chairs, you would look at it and you would say immediately, that is an odd chair, but it would never, you would never have any doubt in your mind exactly what it was. It's a chair. Now Plato says, why? Plato says, why do things like this happen? Paul's like, oh, brother, I can see where this is going, right out the window. By the time I leave here, I won't even think I exist anymore. Okay, here's what he says. That in the forms, ideas, essences, and prototypes, there is a perfect chair, a prototype chair. And every other chair that we use, that we have on earth, is a imperfect copy. That's another one of my oohs, too, that I didn't get. Oh, okay, listen, here's what he says. There is a perfect chair. All right, General Motors, the brand new Baconian, the Baconian Mark V, the Mark V Baconian, the new GM car. What do? They tweak out this perfect car. It is the Baconian. It's the prototype. The prototype is handmade. Everything is absolutely perfect. Everything's absolutely perfect, right? Everything is tweaked in absolutely. This is the prototype. And then what do? They come up before GM, and GM says, we like it, let's go with it. Then what do? They reproduce thousands of imperfect copies. Isn't that what happens? The same thing as a prototype. Jesus Christ is the prototype of the Christian life. He came to earth, lived a sinless life. He didn't turn the breads into stone. Not that he would want to anyway, because he wasn't asked to do that. But he didn't turn the stones into bread, because he knew that Steve Bacon wouldn't be able to turn stones into bread when he came to a trial in his life. So what did he do? All the time he used the Word of God and said, it is written, it is written, it is written, showing us a prototype of how we're to live the Christian life. We go through suffering, and what do? Think of others. Right? Christ is on the cross. Father, forgive them. The prototype is Christ. He's perfect. What are we? Trying to be Christ-like. We're imperfect copies of the prototype. But does not the Bible say that Christ is in us? Colossians 1:27. I give you a mystery, Christ in you, the hope of glorification. Does it not say that we are his workmanship? The bottom line is this, folks. Christ is the prototype. We are imperfect copies. Plato says that these two kinds of reality come together in the world in which we exist. And this explains everything. This is where we exist. It is the realm of sensory experience. We taste, we touch, we smell, we hear, we see. This is the place of poets, artists, shadows, techniques, and crafts. Okay? Are you guys kind of following this? Okay, this is where we live. But you know what? Paul, what would make a man... Let's say... Okay, cigarettes. Now, I don't know if any of you smoke cigarettes, and if you do, that's up to you. I don't have any, and I'm not one of these guys who says, oh, get right with God, get right with God. Take two cigarettes and burn them. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. But this is what I'm saying. If you smoke cigarettes, I don't think that there's anyone here as a mature, thinking, intelligent adult that's going to sit here and say, I smoke cigarettes, and you know what? It's good for me. Smoking cigarettes is a good thing for me to do. It's good for me. I think if you ask most smokers, even smokers who enjoy it, they would tell you, I wish I didn't enjoy it and I wish I could quit. But I struggle with it. It's something I struggle with, right? Now, here's another thing Plato was dealing with. Paul, what would cause a man to do something or a woman to do something that they know is hurting them? Who smokes? Does anybody mind saying they smoke in here? Okay, Ginger, you smoke. Do you have any delusions whatsoever about the fact that this is not good for you?
No.
Okay, you know it's not, but you do it anyway, right? And it's something that, you get to the point. I used to smoke. I used to smoke almost 2.5 packs of cigarettes a day when I was in the Navy. But you know what? I knew it was no good for me, and I ended up quitting, and luckily I wasn't that bad addicted where I had to, where I really had a tough time with it. But the thing is, Plato says, what would make a man do something that would make him a worse person? That would break down their health intentionally. What would make you eat all the garbage that you ate yesterday? Well, Easter. My wife made a feast. My family came over. My wife made a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat for Easter. And this thing, it had everything. I mean, it was unbelievable. And after the meal, everyone was like, oh, boy, I'll tell you. Can't even talk to each other, you're falling asleep, and my family's boring to start with, so I mean, you get them stuffed with food, forget it. It's like watching grass grow, you know? The idea is, though, what would make a person do something that is not, that would make them, that would be bad for them? Well, the answer is this. We live in the overlap of what? The irrational, the nonsensical, the almost nothingness, the flickering place of unbelievable flux and change and radical change and a cosmic soup of things that are just happening, putting themselves together and falling apart, triangles. These things are triangles, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later. And up here, this is very stable, very perfect, very immutable, unchanging, and perfectly stable. Where do we live? In the middle. And that explains why rational people do irrational things. That explains why, ever see anybody in love, folks? You ever see, listen, I work in the high school. Talk to me about it. Somebody's in love, they, all of a sudden they go bananas. You have an A student, and all of a sudden they're walking around like, you know, their head's in the clouds. They're walking into the lockers. They're not handing in their homework. They're all, everything, they go bananas. It is, you know what it is? It's insanity. It's temporary insanity. They've gone crazy. And Plato would say it's because of this stuff down here. A part of what's happening here, okay? Because this is imperfect, this chair is imperfect, it's not going to last very long. It's going to break. Because this chair will never break. The prototype will never break. Now, when we die, folks, when we die, where do we go? It depends if you ask old Plato. I just wrote that. It's unbelievable the way God gives me lyrics. When you die, listen carefully, you go here. Now this is important because it's on the test. That's what I always tell the seniors. It's important because it's on the test. The stuff that we told you that was important that wasn't on the test, you'll forget. But this here, when you die, you go here. You go to the world of forms, essences, ideas, and prototypes. And you stay there. Nobody knows why Plato believed this, folks. But you stay there for a period of 10,000 years. After 10,000 years, you're reborn. And you come back into the overlap. Okay? While you're here, you learn everything there is to know about essences, prototypes, forms, and ideas. However, and this is the way Plato writes it. He's a wonderful writer. He says, but when we are born, we drink from the river of forgetfulness. We drink from the river. And he's got this idea, folks, that when we actually go through the birth process of being born, we forget all of this stuff and we spend the rest of our lives trying to relearn it. Understanding this, okay? Are you following me? Okay. Now that I've got that done, I'm going to try to go to the next jump here, okay? Okay. Over here, folks, how do I want to do this to you? I think we'll do it this way first. Let me grab one more thing here. Okay, you can take out the cave. Well, you don't even have to. I'm going to put it up. Hey, listen, is this making any sense at all?
Yeah.
If it's making any sense at all, you would not believe how well we're doing. Because I look at blank stares for a good 10 days when we start this with the high school. Okay, now watch this. In the Republic, Book 7, I believe, Plato gives, well, I won't find it for you. I'm almost positive it's Book 7. Yeah, I'm almost positive. Or is it Book 6 or Book 7? In Book 6 or Book 7, in the Republic, Plato gives an analogy. He tells a story about a cave. He says, let's imagine that there are people and they are sitting down and they're chained to the floor and they're put in such a way that they can only look forward. Okay? These are the people. And they spend their life now looking, I keep tripping over this tonight, looking at the wall. This is a wall of the cave, okay? They're looking at the wall. Now over here, folks, is a fire. Okay? There's a fire built over here. And there's a little wall over here, okay? And you get a stuffed animal of a cat. And you put the stuffed animal on the wall. What's going to happen? It's going to what? It's going to, the shadow is going to be reflected. Now watch this. This is brilliant, so try to follow this. I know, Harvey, you're going to be wanting to borrow these books, so chill out. Just, he's getting all excited there. Chomping at the bit. You philosopher, you can't fool me. But on the wall, these people are going to see what? A cat. A shadow of a cat. A shadow of a cat?
Not a real cat.
A shadow of an imitation of a cat. Right?
Right.
Okay. And they're going to look at it and they're going to think it's real. Because they're so used to being tied up that they don't know any better. Now let's suppose that someone could get loose and they would turn around. You know what would happen? They would be so frightened by the brilliance of the fire, which is what? What's the fire?
Light.
Light. But what kind of light?
Hot.
Artificial light.
Oh.
It's not the sun. Is it?
No.
It's a light that you build for yourself inside your house. Right? Now, are you ready for this? This is absolutely brilliant. I'm excited just telling you about this. This is how cool this is. If somebody could see, if they could be released, they would immediately run out over here, and when they saw this, they'd be so afraid. What would they do? They'd be chained, they'd run back and they'd put their chains back on. However, if they were bold enough, you know what they would do? They would walk right up and they would see the imitation of the cat. And they would see the light. And then if they were even bolder, they would say, to heck with this, I'm getting out of here. And they would go outside into the daylight, out of the cave, and they would see the real sun shining on a real cat. You get the idea? This is Plato's theory of learning. And I'm going to show you how it works, okay? Now, he does the same thing with what is called the divided line. It's called the divided line theory, and that's the next book in the Republic. Isn't this exciting?
Yeah.
Cool, huh? Okay, can't wait to get... Oh, is Abraham going to be good tonight or what? Okay. This is called the divided line. Now, watch how this works, folks. You ready? Hey, watch. Watch me here for a minute. Lights are going to start going off. All of a sudden, this is all going to click for you. I hope everyone in the room gets it. You watch. It's exciting. Watch this. The receptacle, right? Where we live, the overlap, and forms, ideas, essences, and prototypes, right? This is his divided line. The first level of learning is the art, the artists, the poets, shadows, conjectures, stories, and fantasy. The poets, Homer, they create fantasy. That's the first level of learning, the most ignorant kind. Who represents it? Not the people. The shadows that are projected on the walls. They're shadows. They're fantasy. They're not real. They're painting art. Art. According to Plato, in his perfect utopia, in the Republic, he tells you what the perfect place would be, what the perfect life would be like, and you know what? Who would not be allowed in the perfect utopia, the perfect civilization? Artists and poets would not be allowed, because they're ignorant. Get the idea? They create fantasy. The next level of learning, folks... No, you know what? He expanded on much of what Socrates... See, I didn't have time to show you, but Socrates had a theory about the good, the true, and the beautiful. The idea is to get to the good, okay? Now, watch this. The next theory of learning is... Notice where this is lined up with now. The bottom right here, poet, artist, shadows, techniques... these three right here are very close to the receptacle. You see the idea? See how this lies right along the side of these two things? They're very close to the receptacle because it's almost nonsensical. You ever read fantasy stories? You ever read Homer? I mean, even today, it's nonsensical. So he's down here. Now we learn a little bit more, though, and we're getting toward the top of the ideas and prototypes side of the overlap. A little higher up. You all with me? And what is that? Technique, know-how, craftsmanship. This is... the guy who can make a flute. The guy who actually has learned some technique to do something. Some kind of skill. Some kind of artesian... Some kind of artesian skill, okay? Artistry. And this is represented by Homer down here, the artist. But over here, the technique, know-how, and the craftsman are represented by the Milesian school. Who are the Milesian philosophers? Come on, who are the three philosophers from Miletus? Thales and Socrates and Anaximenes. Did these guys come up with any really cool philosophical beliefs? No. All they did is look at things and say, I wonder what it's all made of. Know-how. You see what I mean? They looked at things and they said, I wonder what it's like. Heraclitus. I wonder what it's made of. It's all flux. That's what it's all made of. See? Dealing with physics. Now, look at what happens. The next step is what? You're in the forms, ideas. When you've reached this level of learning, folks, you're in the forms, ideas, prototypes, and essences. You understand something that can't be understood with taste, touch, smell, sight, or hearing. You understand what can only be understood with the mind, math. Ever touch a number? Ever touch an algebraic equation? It's an abstract concept of the mind, correct? When you understand mathematics and hypotheses, then you're into Pythagoras and Zeno. We talked a little bit about Zeno. Remember him? The two cars coming towards each other can never pass each other. Remember that guy? He's not important. Don't worry about it. I never wrote a paper on him because I've never had the courage. Remember the two chariots coming towards each other? He says two chariots coming towards each other at the same speed can never pass each other because they continually split the distance of the two in half. Remember I drew it on the board? No, even on different sides of the road.
Oh.
Okay. What?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, but you see what's happening here? See how the level of learning is? Okay, now watch this. Then, tested theory. Socrates and Plato. This is the highest form of learning. This is the most that you can ever learn in this earth. You have penetrated into the ideas, forms, essences, and prototypes, and you know the real nature of things. You know what you've done, folks? I'll tell you exactly what you've done. You've walked out of the cave, and you're in the light, and you no longer see things as they appear to be because they're projected on a wall as a shadow, but you see an actual cat in three-dimensional reality that you can hold, that you can pet, and which is illuminated by the light of the sun. Does everybody get it? Pretty complicated theory, huh? Okay, it would be right here. If you could go through here, this would be shadows, right? What would be the next? What would be the next form?
Wall.
Actually something. There's an actual three-dimensional something on the wall. How many dimensions over here?
One.
Two, right?
Yeah.
Height and width. Okay. Over here you have height, width, and breadth. Okay? Three-dimensional, but not real. So this is the artesian. Can you imagine the people who get the tape of this? Trying to understand this? Gosh. And then the third one would be what? Understanding the nature of illumination, right? Fire is something that he's going to use. Fire is something that is... how can I say this? Although we can control a fire, right? We can't control the essence of fire. You know what I'm saying? Man can control a fire, but he can't control the essence of what fire is. And that's represented by what is really true, the sun, which we cannot control. So this is still controllable. You see what I mean? It's, in other words, where's the abstract principle? What is this thing called burning? What does that mean, this thing called burning? Self-lighting. You follow what I'm saying? The concept of fire, of burning. And this gets into Heraclitus, which we don't have time to get into, but he said all things are fire, the flux guy. Okay, now watch this. So, first level, second level, third level, out the door, and Socrates and Plato. Socrates and Plato are outside. Zeno and Pythagoras are the fire, right? The Milesian school, Thales, Anaximander, and Anaximenes are this school and Homer. That's why, folks, in the perfect society, there would never, ever, ever, ever be any poets and any artists. Because they represent all that is ignorant about society. Now, can you see why this got them into some trouble as far as being called impious? Who's the biggest idiot in society? The one who wrote the Bible. The one who wrote the Greek Bible. The Iliad and the Odyssey. And who's the one that he starts with in his defense? In Socrates' defense, he says, the first people I went to were the poets. And what did they say? They put lots of clever words together, but when I quizzed them about their own material, guess what? They didn't have a clue about what it was about. So I realized that they're devoid of wisdom. And then he comes to the idea that what? He's the only one that has any wisdom because he's the only one who realizes that he's not wise. Now, this is a mouthful, isn't it? Any questions? Isn't it amazing how this all comes together? Go like this. Oh boy, I'll tell you what. I don't like doing this to you either, folks. It's not my fault. I'm really a good-natured guy inside. I don't want to hurt nobody. I want to be everybody's friend. Okay, what else can we say about Plato? Well, go to your handout on Plato. I know what you're thinking. Nothing. That's what else we can say about Plato. Absolutely nothing. Come on, Harvey. You're not into this now? You didn't think this was interesting? Hey, you want to see my original notes before I typed them out? Oh, by the way, would you have another hand? Oh, yes. That one there. Right? Nope, that one right there. Did I give you that one? Let me see this. Did I give you guys this one?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Why don't you take a look at that real quick? These are my original notes on this before I typed it up, folks. These are my... Now, let me just tell you what this is about so you can understand. This is just a breakdown of the divided line theory. Remember the divided line I just gave you? Okay, this is the center again. This is the center, okay? These are the first two, and these are the Greek words. I just break them down for... These are the Greek words that Plato uses, and I break them down for the kids. They appreciate this stuff like that. They're into learning. To the Republic, the divided line. So book 7 must be the cave, okay? He just explains them the same thing two different ways. Now, but you see over here, Homer, conjecture, guessing, picturing things, telling stories. That's the first level. The second level is over here, pistos, which is the Greek word to believe, to have faith. You learn something, knowing how to do something, okay? All right, we'll move on. And then now we start talking about math, specialized understanding of things, and gnosis. Gnosis is knowledge, true knowledge, understanding, you know, why things are. And the only way you know that is when you penetrate math. Then you're in the forms, ideas, essences, and prototypes. Epinosis. Is that what you're going to say?
I was going to say, where does epinosis fit in there?
Epinosis is a technical term that Paul develops to show that gnosis isn't enough. Because the Gnostics, which Gnosticism comes from the word gnosis, they thought that they knew something. Paul says, no, you don't need gnosis as in knowledge. You need epinosis, overthinking. Epi is just a preposition in the Greek, which means more. Or like higher.
Full knowledge.
Right, right.
You can't put any more in. You're full.
Exactly. And it's a deeper understanding of God. But that's a very technical term. Because he's dealing with a sect of Gnostics in the book of Colossians.
Did you ever read the book, A Strange Land?
Out the Clock?
No,
it's a science fiction book, right?
Fiction.
Oh, no. Heinlein.
No.
Is it Heinlein? Who wrote that? Stranger in a Strange Land.
I can't think of it. To get into it was weird, and he used the word gronk. I gronk you. In other words, you were totally that person. You knew everything in his being. You knew everything.
Uh-huh.
Gronk. And every time the pastor would say gnosis, epinosis, I kept thinking.
I gronk you, pastor. All right. Yeah, well, you know what? It's even more. Being spirit-taught is just availability to the spirit. You know what I mean? Through brokenness. Epinosis is penetrating beyond knowledge. In other words, I can know 10 points on prayer and how to pray. But do I pray? Prayer is touching the heart of God. That's epinosis. See, here's... I don't want to really get into this, but what happens is... No.
No.
That's not. No, it's definitely not Ray Bradbury. Okay, you get. I guarantee you. I think it's Robert Heinlein.
I can find it. No, it's Ray Bradbury.
I'm telling you, it is not Ray Bradbury. I have read every one of Ray Bradbury's books.
Oh,
definitely. I love the guy.
I can find it.
It's definitely. Okay, listen to this though, folks. Okay. Well, this is what it means very quickly. When you take knowledge, okay. Knowledge, like knowledge, you hear information about praying, and then you mix that knowledge with faith. then it becomes epinosis. When you believe what has been said, then it's going to take upon itself a transforming character in your life. So therefore, you hear about prayer, and the man of God who does not pray is transformed into a praying man. Not a praying man thus. That would be a completely different... That would be a different kind of transformation. Folks. Okay, hey, this class is out of its mind. Everybody see what I'm getting at with this thing? And I gave you... Aren't you glad I typed it up?
Yeah, at least we know we're out of our minds, but that makes us...
That's right. That makes us wise, knowing that we're unwise. Right, exactly.
I'm out of my mind, but I'm happy.
Okay, let me just see very quickly here. Oh, boy. I'll tell you what. Okay, let me just look very quickly if there's any things I want to wrap up very quickly with Plato. In your notes, you can, God bless you, you just go through them and it goes into the prototypes, ideas, and essences. Oh, and by the way, I told you a little bit about Werner Heisenberg, right, the subatomic physicist, when he was in his laboratory. Yeah, well, now do you understand what I mean? When he was looking at these micro species of atoms, looking at an atom and looking at the what's happening inside the atom, subatomic, species, microorganisms, right? When he's looking at this, you know what he sees? He sees the receptacle. Things are falling apart and coming together so quickly, they make no sense. So he comes outside on the porch, he lights a cigarette, and he says, what do you think? Was Plato right?
Oh, yeah. The light went on.
What do you think? Was Plato right? And maybe there is this receptacle that makes absolutely no sense. This crazy void that this very ordered universe, which is an incredible order, and the more we look at it, the more discreetly we look at it, distinctly we look at it, the more powerful the lens, the more crazy it is. Yet it's all together and it's working in a perfect order, but it's nuts. You know what? There must be a God.
You know what?
Right? Yeah.
Walter Martin uses Heidelberg?
Heisenberg,
that theory to prove that miracles can't happen because if it's the basic stuff in the universe has this fluxing, then a miracle can't
happen. Wow. That's a good point. Oh, I'd love to hear that, sure. You know what I mean? You see how all this comes together? So don't be unimpressed with poor Plato, because physicists are very impressed with Plato. You know what else? The greatest astrophysicist who studies the stars, who is alive today, he is the Albert Einstein of today. His name is Stephen Hawking, and he wrote a book called A Brief History of Time, he's crippled, but he is absolutely brilliant, and he believes in quantum mechanics, which is this really nuts thing about time travel and everything, right? If you know anything about physics, which I know so little, it's not even funny. But the idea is this. He is very impressed with Plato because you know what? He sees Plato is the way that he sees the universe in 10 to the 48th of a second before the Big Bang. Negative 10 to the 48th of a second before the Big Bang. What was the universe like 10 to the negative 48th of a second before the Big Bang? 10 with 48 negative point 10 with 48 zeros after it. Of a second. What was the universe like negative 10 to the 48th of a second before the Big Bang? What happened? What was it like? You know what he says? The receptacle. He doesn't say that, but the way he describes it, I read it and I say, he's talking about Plato. He's talking about total chaos and plasma. It's this soupy kind of plasma, almost nothing. He's talking about Plato. So astrophysicists are very impressed with Plato. You know what? So am I. I like the guy. I think he's a good writer. I like what he says. He's also very funny. He's a very funny writer. He's always making fun of somebody. You should see how... I don't even want to get into that. Forget it. We'll be here all night. Let me just look at a couple more things here and make sure that we have it all. Oh.
Triangles.
Let me just say this and we'll end. Yes, I have to tell you about the triangle. All right, hold on just one second. Okay, let me explain it to you this way. How does... He believes in God, by the way. Plato has a God, and the God's name is on the exam. He's called the Demiurge. Demiurge. The Greek word is the Demiurgos. Demiurgos. Demiurge. And it means craftsman. It means craftsman. Plato believes in a craftsman God. And what does he mean by this? Well, what is a Plato worships a God that is so benign, that is so useless, that it's you can't even really imagine anybody really honoring this God. But to Plato, the Demiurgos is basically the God who does nothing. The Demiurgos does not create the universe out of nothing. He doesn't bara things like Elohim does, like Yahweh does in Genesis chapter 1, to create something out of nothing. He doesn't do that. What he does is, this already exists, okay? The receptacle already exists. The prototypes, forms, and essences already exist. What the Demiurgos does is put them together and create an overlap that we can live in. Get the idea? The Demiurgos, or Plato's craftsman God, simply creates the overlap which makes it possible for us to live. And why is his creation imperfect, Harvey? Why would the Demiurge create an imperfect world? No, think about it for a minute. What is he using for raw material?
Nothing.
He's using this, which is imperfect, and this which is. And that's why we have some very beautiful things in the world and some very crazy things.
That's what we call a substance or a compound. It's not a element.
Right. It's not a single element like carbon, right? Okay, good. I have just blown my entire knowledge of chemistry. That's all I know about chemistry is what an element is. And I happen to have the periodic table memorized, but that's as far as I go. Okay, no, I'm only kidding. All right, now the last thing is this. Go to the last page that you have on the Plato handout, and that's where you have the picture of all the crazy triangles. Or the Platonic solids. Okay. Billy, are you with me?
Yeah.
I'm not losing you. All right. I try to gauge how everybody's doing. If anybody looks at me like this, like, I get the idea sometimes that they're not getting it. There are five perfect solids, okay? And these are pictures of them. Now, to the Greeks, there were four elements. Anybody know what they were? What were the four elements?
Yeah.
No. Earth. Fire.
Earth, fire, wind.
Air. And water, right? Those are the four elements. Plato conceives of all things. Well, here's what Plato says, ready? He doesn't say it like this, but I'm going to paraphrase him. All things are triangles. Math. Back to math again. And what does he say? All things, and here's what he does. He ascribes, look at this thing now on page 10. I didn't draw this. I got this out of a book and I blew it up so that you could appreciate it. The first one is the pyramid. Now, the tetrahedron, all right? The tetrahedron is the tetrahedra, or hedra just simply means faces. This is what he found, that if you use only triangles, okay, there are only five solids that you can make using only that shape. In other words, let me give you an example. Boy, this is kind of tough. If I take this is a triangle, right? If I take this, and then I put another triangle on the side the same way, and another triangle this way, I have a solid, right? And I can take, now I have what? A base that if I put two triangles together, I have the base. Right? Something like that, right? Okay? Now, so what it is it's a perfect solid. Square, same thing. If I take a square here, a square there, a square here, I can make a perfect solid with that hedra, that face. That face being a square. There are only five of those that exist. And four of them are right here. You have the tetrahedra on the top, which is the triangle. Do you have this page?
No.
No, I forgot my thing.
Oh, okay. All right, you can look on with him. The top one is the tetrahedron, or the pyramid. The second one are the cubes. The third one are the octahedra, okay, which are made up of eight perfect sides, okay? And then the icosahedra is the one at the bottom. Now what he does, and there's also another one, which I can't remember the name of it because it's one of those crazy names. But watch this. What he does is he takes these four perfect solids and ascribes to them one of the elements. The first one is what water is, what fire looks like in its most basic form. Do you see it? All right, the tetrahedra, the corpuscles of fire. The second one, regular cubes, corpuscles of earth. This is in the micro stage, right? Microbiotic stage. The octahedra is air, and the icosahedra is water. So the four basic elements of the earth are all made up of what? Triangles. And what is the receptacle like? It is triangles putting themselves together and decomposing immediately. Flickering images of triangles trying to get themselves into reality. If they click, they take on a form in the overlap. And that's why we have a desk, earth, air, the world. Does that make any sense? How many people, put your hand up if you understand what we've said tonight. You think you have anyway. Okay, I don't think we can do any better than that in one night. I mean, I think we've pretty much flown through Plato. By the way, before I get that question, Plato's most famous quote, you want to write this down because it's not in your notes. Plato's most famous quote. Here's what he said. I come in four colors, and if you leave my caps off, I'll dry up. I come in four colors, and if you leave my caps off, I dry up. Oh, that's Play-Doh. Oh. Never mind. I thought I was thinking Play-Doh. Oh. The seniors got that.
No, that I understood.
I come in four colors, and if you leave my caps off, I dry up. No. That's Play-Doh, not Plato. What?
If you speed up time,
yeah,
that's what this is, coming together and falling apart, just like you say.
Right, exactly. If you can reach this, which Albert Einstein said, you cannot reach the speed of sound, the speed of light. See, here's the thing. According to this thing about anybody ever see the show Quantum Leap? All right, I've never seen it, but I've heard about, it's basically about quantum mechanics, traveling in time. The idea is simply this, folks. Albert Einstein totally rejected Max Planck's theory of quantum mechanics because he said, here was his famous quote, God does not play dice with the universe. But you know what? The more we've learned about the universe, the more we realize, no, God's not playing dice, but he understands the chaos that we can't understand. That's the thing, you see? And the big thing is this, if Stephen Hawking is right, and it looks like he is, folks, I mean, this guy is right on the ball. If he's right, then this universe is so stinking crazy, you would not even believe it. It is just unbelievable. And it's ordered, and it functions perfectly, but behind it is something that we can't understand. Isn't that amazing? Exactly, that's right. By all things, by Christ, all things consist, and that's Colossians 1, 17 and 18.
All things are held together by the word of his power.
Hebrews 1, 2. Yeah. Hebrews 1, 2, and 3. All things consist by the word of his power. Okay?